Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and today I've got a special episode for you. I am introducing you to one of my dear friends who is also a true crime podcaster. Her name is Tabitha, and she hosts the Housewives of True Crime podcast. So, funny story about Tabitha. My first time ever at CrimeCon, I had this setup at my table that had like some disco balls and like some black netting. I don't know. I just kind of was like going for this sparkly gothic vibe. And I spotted Tabitha at CrimeCon. She had this really cool jumpsuit on. She looked like a Ghostbuster, but it was like with bedazzled Tabitha on the back of her jumpsuit. And I thought it was so cool. But I thought she was so cool and pretty that I was too intimidated to ever actually go say hi. And the funny thing is, part of her decoration also included disco balls. And then I come to find out that like part of her shtick is to call her listeners disco biscuits and disco balls, girls and boys. I love it so much. So I eventually worked up the courage to introduce myself, and I love her. We've collaborated a couple times. We've done an episode together. We've exchanged episodes on our feeds. And so I just wanted to bring her back onto the podcast so that you guys could enjoy a little taste of something different but similar. If you guys enjoy Mama Mystery, I know you're going to enjoy Housewives of True Crime also. So make sure you're following her podcast on Spotify, Apple, Instagram, Facebook, wherever you choose to get your content. Make sure you give her a follow as well. You're going to love her just as much as I do. So without further ado, I'm going to let her tell you this crazy, crazy con man story. Almost too unbelievable to be true, but of course in true crime it is. So here we go.
Also, you can find me at Housewives of True Crime, wherever you listen to podcasts, and on social media, Housewives of True Crime, or Tab the Housewife. I'm also on that with Instagram. Clink, clink. Welcome to Housewives of True Crime. I'm Tabitha, your true crime housewife, and I'm bringing you real crimes, real twists, and searching for real justice every week. I've got a brand new disco biscuit riding shotgun, sometimes a fan, sometimes a friend, but someone always fabulous. So grab whatever you're drinking these days, press play, and let's talk crime in the carpool line. Clink, clink. Welcome.
Welcome.
Housewives of True Crime. Jenny.
Times two.
Times two. Oh my gosh. Okay. If you guys are watching on YouTube, I set up this makeshift studio and it's got wires and everything behind the scenes you cannot see. It's crazy. And Jenny walked in and she was like, what is this?
It's very techie at the moment. If you guys only had a slight clue of what is happening right now.
Yeah, she has to hold her mic because yeah. It's the stand is actually not standing. So anyways, it will get better, I promise. But if you are listening on Spotify or Apple or wherever you just listen to podcasts and you're not actually watching, then you are going to be just fine.
Yes.
But welcome. We have Jenny officially is a disco biscuit and she is starting off today, which is crazy. And I got us a decoration for Christmas.
I know, I saw that. I was like, it's very disco biscuit appropriate.
Yes, I know.
So thank you for that.
I found a wreath made of disco balls, you guys. And so I had to buy it and it's missing a disco ball actually on the top.
It is?
Yeah.
It's I hope you got a discount.
You didn't even ask, did you?
You need to ask for a discount. That should be like 20% off.
It should.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was from Home Goods, and I think they do give a discount when they're like missing a ball.
Yeah. Well, now you know for next time.
Now I know. So anyways, we are on our home stretch of the year, and I'm sure Jenny has already gotten all of her Christmas shopping done.
I actually haven't.
You haven't?
No. I know, that's like really shocking.
Yes, it is.
I haven't. I prefer to start shopping in like July, but I do have a place where I have some items ready to go.
Okay.
But all I'm right. not done.
Yeah. I think that my daughter is getting absolutely zero. We won't talk about why, but she is giving me gray hairs, you guys. 16-year-olds. Well, she's not even 16. She's like pre-16 by 2 weeks, but she has given me a run for my money.
Yep.
Yes.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Definite run for my money.
Actually, I was thinking of you this morning because I was so irritated that my kid needed a last minute poster board, which, by the way, why is it always the poster boards? I swear it's
and they're always sold out, by the way.
Yes, exactly. And then I told him, I said, you realize you're going to only have like a neon green in this store. And then he says, oh, I'm going to handle it, but oh, I don't have money. So where's your credit card? Yeah, exactly. And have you even looked at the store hours and all these things? And I was so irritated. And then you
thought about me and you were like, wow, my kid is actually doing just fine.
And then
fine.
I realized, yeah, you know,
it's fine.
I'll take the poster board.
Yeah. Kyla's costing me a lot of money right now. So, all right. This case is a long one. And if you don't know Jenny yet, she has a full-time job. And so she is doing this out of the kindness of her heart on her lunch break, which is great. And so this case is long, but it's so well worth it. You are going to, you are going to just, no.
It's blow my mind?
It's going to blow your mind.
All
it's
right.
actually pretty nuts. So,
I'm here for it.
Okay. So this is the case of Clark Rockefeller. Like, you know Rockefeller? You just were in New York a couple years ago.
Uh-huh.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yeah, it just came up on my memory.
I know. And so Rockefellers are like the biggest family in New York, Rockefeller Center. It's like everybody knows.
The tree. Everyone knows the tree. Yeah.
But I actually didn't. I was like, I don't really know why it's named that or whatever. But
I guess I didn't either.
Did you?
No.
I had no idea. It's from a guy named John D. Rockefeller. He was the richest man in all of modern America. And if he was still around today, he would be up there with like Elon Musk-esque. Okay. Huh. He founded the Standard Oil Company in 1870, and he had about $1 billion in 1913.
Whoa.
So you can imagine just how much money he would have today or how much his family has still today. You know,
there's a long list. There's got to be a couple of trust fund babies in there.
Oh, 100% there is.
More than a couple, probably. Have we never heard of this guy until now?
John D. Rockefeller? Because we're not from New York. We just go there and like.
I mean, we all know who Elon is. We all know who Bill Gates is.
Okay, it might just be us that don't know.
Are we living under a rock?
Just me and you. Everybody else. Everybody else in their car.
Everyone's probably thinking we're real stupid right now.
100%. They're like, you girls are so dumb. Don't you know who the Rockefellers
are? I really want to know who else is aware of this.
Probably East Coast people.
Okay. All right.
So if you have the name or the last name Rockefeller, I'm sure you are one, doing pretty well, and two, can get yourself into a country club with just the last name, especially on the East Coast. Okay. However, our story doesn't start in the East Coast. It does not start in a Manhattan penthouse. It starts in a small town called Bavaria, West Germany, with a man named Christian Karl. And this last name is like a little bit too crazy for me to even say, but it's like, I'm gonna try for you guys. Garheistreiter.
Oh my goodness.
It's so long. It's very German last name.
Yeah.
Okay, so Christian was born February 21st, 1961. His father was a house painter and an amateur artist. Anybody would know.
Okay.
And his mother was a seamstress. Okay, so even though Clark wasn't from like the aristocratic family, he really fancied fine money. And he really, really loved the show Gilligan's Island.
Oh my gosh, I used to love that show.
I did too. Okay, so.
Yes, I would watch it at my grandma's house all the time.
Okay, so did I. And do you know, it was only on for like 3 seasons and it was in, I think, like the 60s or 70s. So it's crazy that
we. It was only 3 seasons?
Yes, and we watched it as like.
I must have rewatched the same episodes like 16,000 times.
Same. Yeah. Same. I watched it all the time. And I'm thinking to myself, like, our kids don't watch Full House or anything that we used to watch.
Oh, no, my kids do. We are obsessed with Full House
like
in my house.
The old Full House, yes. Not the Fuller House?
We have watched both. And now we are rewatching episodes. Yeah.
No way.
Yeah.
Okay. It. Maybe it's just me. All right. Well, yeah. I like
but
that.
But that's probably like the only example that you could put out that I would say that to.
Yeah. Like Three's Company.
Anything else? No. No.
No. Okay. So.
Small Wonder.
Oh my Small gosh. Wonder. I love that.
That show so much.
That was my favorite show of all time, yeah, actually. Yeah. Okay. So he watched Gilligan's Island. And can you guess who Christian loved? What character he loved?
No.
Thurston Howell the Third.
Oh my gosh. Can you do that voice again?
Yes. Actually, Christian would do that voice come later on in his life when he got to America because he was so obsessed with Thurston Howell the Third that he learned his accent. Like he was like, oh, that's how people in America talk that are rich.
Wow. Okay.
At 17, Christian decided really that Germany wasn't for him and wanted more. So in 1978, he managed to charm this American family that he met on a train in Germany. So he meets this random American family. And of course, as soon as he meets them, he's like, oh my God, they're Americans. I want to go to America. So yeah. He like invites them over to his house. And he's like, so well spoken. And by the way, Christian read like, he was like in the library all the time. He read. So his vocabulary was like higher than the average bear. And so he talks to these Americans and they are like, oh my gosh, this kid is awesome. Why don't you come over when you ever come to America? You can stay with us. And sure as shit, he was like, sign me up. So he makes his way to the United States, no joke, and shows up at these Americans' door. They probably never thought he was actually going to come.
No.
No.
That's probably what happened with you inviting me on the cruise. You probably didn't think I was actually going to come. There I was.
There you were. And now here you are. Yeah. No, I thought you would come. It wasn't easy to get you to come only because you work and like you had to take off. But
logistics of kids and all that. Yeah.
And it's kids crazy. Logistics is really crazy. Yeah. But you made it work.
Yeah.
We all made it work. And the Wi-Fi was terrible also, so we couldn't really like contact our family that much. And we were really busy.
Yes.
So anyways, okay. So he shows up to America, to these family's door. And they were like, okay, sure. You can go to college or not. I think he was in high school. I think he registered for high school and basically was like their exchange student.
Whoa.
Yes. Which is not like a 1 week visit.
No.
That's like you're staying there on these people's couch. And supposedly he kind of acted like he was just high society and wanted these guys to make him breakfast and lunch and dinner. And they got pretty tired of him pretty quickly.
Yeah, I would imagine.
I guess when he decided that he wasn't going to answer the door for their daughter who came home and left her outside for like 2 hours. They
Are
were like,
"Are you kidding me?"
No. Can you imagine?
No.
Yeah. So they were like,
I guess there is a maturity level there, right? Like you're so intelligent, but your maturity level is not there yet.
Right. Yes. Because you're 17 and you're like,
right,
an asshole of a child still pretty much when you're 17 and you're like, I'm not getting out of bed. But on the other hand, you're like, you're freeloading at our house, going to school.
Get up and answer the door.
Answer the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. So Christian overstayed his welcome and they didn't like that attitude. No one would. And really that, I think they were ready for him to leave. The door, the not answering the door was just like the straw that broke the camel's back. So Christian decided that at this point that Christian Carl Geheisterreiter.
We're going to get a message from some German person after this giving us a lecture or a lesson.
You know, I love Germans, by the way. I've had best friends that are Germans and they would just be laughing right now. So if any other German doesn't like how I say that last name, just know that I mean it in all good fun. Okay. And Christian, he was like, that's a mouthful too. It's not very American. So he decided he was going to change his name to Christian.
I was like, wow, we're taking a turn here.
That's more like 2025.
Okay.
No. He was going to start going by Christopher Kenneth Gerhardt.
Okay.
He thought that this new name really sounded more American.
It is a little easier to pronounce.
Yes. And he makes his way to Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And this is in 1979. He decided to enroll in the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And his goal now was just, you know, he wanted to stay in America permanently. But if you want to stay in America permanently, you kind of need a green card.
Right.
And so what does Christopher, who is now not Christian anymore, Christopher, do? Well, he looks for a wife. He's very church going too. He finds his like niche in these churches everywhere he like moves. He gets like himself like involved in the church. And so. Yeah.
And then does he take advantage of people though? That's what I'm wondering, right? Like if he's church hopping like that?
Yes, for sure. Because the guy doesn't want to actually work.
Right.
But he freeloads.
Yeah. Okay.
So he meets this girl who's 22. He's now 20 and convinces her that he needs to get married because if he goes back to Germany, he's going to be drafted into a war. Okay. And she says, okay.
Her name
was Amy Dunkey. And they do this like quick courthouse wedding.
Wow. So she really just went all in.
She's just like, I don't want, like, you know, he had the sob story. He says if he returned to West Germany, he'd be forced into the military service to fight on the Russian front of the Cold War. Now, for the record, there was no Russian front in 1981. And West Germany was not shipping teenage boys to battle in the Soviet army.
So this girl didn't do her research.
Yeah, but it's 1981. Like, what kind of research can you really do?
I guess that's true, right?
Yeah, she probably just believed
him. Believed it.
And I'm telling you, this guy had like a vocabulary. He sounds real smart. Like,
That's true.
Speaking the dictionary, and she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Be easy to fall for.
Yeah, I'm 22. I'll marry you. I'll help you out. Well, he just vanishes, leaves his new bride, which she's probably like, whatever, I don't care. And he heads for California, green card in hand. Now, I'm not sure if it was the next day, but soon after, you know, like that's when he left. I don't know how at that point, how long you get a green card. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's like you have to wait 5 years or something.
Yeah.
But, I think you have to wait 5 years for citizenship. But they make it like a little more harder.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, then it's probably like you sign the papers, like you're handed the green card. Here you go.
Yeah. And it sounds like it was pretty easy for him.
I think it was pretty easy. And so he, you know, he leaves town. She's like, I guess I was scammed. She files a divorce, but she doesn't actually file a divorce for years. And she probably just thought, like, who cares? Like, unless she's going to get married, it's not that big of a deal per se. Okay. Because I don't think she filed until like 1992, which is,
oh my gosh,
10 years or more. Like, that's a long time.
Get rid of them.
I know, right? And she actually had to put an ad in the newspaper because she didn't even know like
how to get in touch with him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So then Christian decides that California has good weather and palm trees and took himself there, which, listen,
this guy gets around.
Yes, he does. And I agree. California has palm trees and good weather and I like it.
I know.
So does Jenny. She misses it. We both miss the weather.
I do. But I really love Texas too, for the record.
I know. But you know, it's actually the Texas weather right now is so beautiful. And Jenny and I are like cringing at the fact that it's going to get cold any day. I'm not ready at all.
Take me to Palm Springs.
I know.
Maybe we should be a lizard.
Maybe we should plan a trip.
Oh, we need to record there, I think.
Palm Springs used to be our jam, man. We would take our kids. We'd do these girls' trips and we would get a vacation on points and then take our kids.
Best days.
And take our German au pair.
Okay, but we have to tell this story real quick.
Okay, what?
We were at the hotel and we would do the water slide like 1,000 times. And at that point, like the kids, we had littles and they would want us to go with them.
Yes.
And you were pregnant.
Oh, yes.
And you had your tankini, I think is what we'll call it.
Yes, because I was very pregnant. I was pregnant with Colton.
Yeah. And I thought it was a maternity suit. And you came down the slide and you were so upset. You said there's a grandma up there wearing the same swimsuit. And I was like, no, I'm sure it just looked like that. And you were insistent. No. Here comes grandma down the water slide.
She was like 80, you guys.
She really was. And I mean, she got out of that water and I just looked at you and said,
we should have taken a picture.
Okay, yeah, you're right. You're right. Same swimsuit.
Same exact swimsuit.
Oh my gosh.
And it's fine. It's fine. I mean,
you were pretty mortified. I was at mortified. The time.
I was probably eight months pregnant.
Yeah, maybe even like maybe even push nine. Yeah,
I was huge. Okay, so that's where Christopher now takes himself, which, you know, by 1983-84, he surfaced in Southern California. Oh, he first went there because he's like, I'm going to be an actor, like all of them do, you know, when they go to California. And in 1983-84, he was not an actor. He didn't make it to the big screen, but he did create another persona. He's no longer Christopher, what was it, Gerhardt. He is now Christopher Mountbatten Chichester.
What?
The 13th Baronet.
That is a mouthful. Where does he even come up with this?
I don't know, but guess what? He also wasn't American anymore. Oh, this accent was horrible. No,
he's something else now.
He's an English aristocrat. With the accent and all. And he even had a crest. I mean, this guy was something. He was like from this baronet family, I guess. I mean, so, and he was going to church and he was kissing ladies' hands, like, you know, grabbing them and like introducing himself, like I am Christopher Manhattan Chichester. So, the 13th Baronet, not that I really even know what that is, but that sounds real fancy. And I think it probably sounded real fancy to a lot of people. Okay. So this royal, he would even give business cards with like his crest on it, like embossed crest.
Oh my gosh.
And he was living in San Marino, California. Do you know San Marino by any chance?
A little bit.
Okay.
So it's like not super familiar, but a little bit. Yeah.
I'm not very familiar either, but I guess it's like a very wealthy suburb of LA. I think it's like Pasadena-esque. So, but I'm not really sure. He was 20 something years old, dressing like an Ivy League East Coaster with this impeccable manners, this British accent.
Yeah.
And he owned it. He would go into country clubs and church events, telling people that he was British royalty and a film producer. And the town residents, they ate it up. Like I said, he would kiss women's hands. He had all the charm. And you know, he'd hand out his business cards with this, you know.
Does he ever get nervous he's going to, like, slip up?
I don't think so.
How do you just walk around holding that type of character and accent for days on end and never slip up?
Years on end, Jenny.
Years.
This went on for years. So I don't know. Like, if somebody did that to me and handed me their business card, I might like roll my eyes. But I guess the people there were just like, this is so amazing. This guy is so very important. Mm-hmm. And we just want to be around him. He ended up becoming like a local fixture at like social clubs, churches. Everybody invited him to come. He spent a lot of time still in the library. Anywhere he could network, he went. And he would, you know, scrounge a free meal wherever he could get one, but he didn't act like he was going there for free meal.
Of course not.
He was going there to do them a favor, to go to their charity event or whatever it was. He would befriend elderly, wealthy widows.
Oh, I do not like that.
Uh-huh. Yep. And he sweet-talked his way into their mansions for fancy dinners, fancy parties. He even managed to rent a guest house on a family's property. Now, I think I don't know if he had to actually pay for the guest house or he just, you know, got a charitable donation from this, like, somewhat wealthy lady. Yeah. The family was the Sohaus family, I think is how you call it. It's like Sohaus or something like that. Sohaus family. It was an elderly woman named Dee Dee Sohaus, I think. And she owned this big house in San Marino. Her adult son, John, and his wife, Linda, lived on the property as well. So they lived like in one house. Chichester lived in the guest house, but he also didn't ever tell anybody that he actually lived in this guest house, right? Because that would kind of be beneath him. Uh-huh. He would say he lived in one of these crazy mansions and he would actually have them drop him off at the mansion and then walk to his guest house.
Oh my God.
I do that in Uber sometimes when I get like a little nervous, but
yeah, I'm like, oh, it's like this house right here.
No. I did that one time and the Uber driver was like, I picked you up at that house like a couple times ago for the airport. And I was like, oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's so embarrassing.
I was so embarrassed. I was like, okay, I don't even know what to say. Like,
right.
Today I'm going to this house.
I'm going to my friend's house for dinner.
Yeah, I was like.
It was a long walk, so I just figured I'd get dropped off here first.
But I just was mortified. I just looked down and like.
That's definitely something you would do, though. No offense.
Yes, it was.
Like,
it
oh, is. I didn't even recognize you from 2 days ago.
I don't. I don't recognize people. I have a problem. Okay, so Chichester charmed Dee Dee into letting him stay in this small cottage in her backyard. And Sir Chichester, living literally in the guest house out back. But no one knew that part, like I said. So Dee Dee, the landlady, apparently also was a drunk.
Oh.
So she was just
even
happy.
More fun.
I know. She was just happy to have someone around to talk to.
Yeah.
And supposedly, you know, he fulfilled that duty. I suspect, and I have no real knowledge to this, but I suspect that he was giving these elderly women like attention that they wanted.
Oh, I'm absolutely.
Yeah. And so they kept him around.
Which is why it's so disgusting.
I know, it really is. It's
so sad.
So in February 1985, John and Linda, Dee Dee's kids, were headed to New York for a couple of days. John was up for some like secret mission, secret government job. So they told a couple friends that they would be out of town and out of touch for a while. Now, John did work for computers, but no like government secret mission work had he ever been up for. So this was like a little out of the ordinary, but nobody really thought much of it. However, John and Linda never returned from New York. In fact, no one ever saw them off to the airport and no one ever saw them again. They just vanished. All their stuff was still there, their truck, clothes, money, everything. They just were never seen again. And Chichester actually seemed to know most about this job opportunity, this classified mission. And he just assured Dee Dee, like, don't worry, John is on this mission. No one can know about it. And she was like, okay, well, I guess so. And she's probably just hitting the bottle, like, whatever.
Yeah.
But as weeks went on and no phone calls from either Linda or John, the suspicions did grow. Some friends found it odd that John and Linda would just end up leaving without a word. And Dee Dee, although, you know, a little diluted, finally did get pretty distraught when Christopher Chichester disappeared. So she filed a missing persons report. Chris may have told some neighbors that he was going back to England. That's, you know, I read some places that he told people, but then I also read that he just like kind of vanished in thin air.
Yeah.
However, guess what? He did take John's truck with him.
Yeah.
So for years and years.
Not surprised.
Yeah, right. For years and years, John and Linda's disappearance was just a mystery, an unsolved mystery, in fact, that was actually shown on Unsolved Mysteries.
What?
With a photo of Christopher G. Chester.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Did they ever look into him or they didn't?
Yeah, they looked into him.
So they did.
Yeah. They showed a picture of Christopher G. Chester on Unsolved Mysteries saying, like, have you seen this man? You know how that show is at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah. But by the time Christopher was shown on Unsolved Mysteries, he was long gone, and he was not Chris Chichester at all. Chichester was dead, and now Chris took on the name Chris Crow.
Oh my gosh, another one.
Another one.
So many names, you can't even keep up.
And he wasn't in California anymore. He was in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Oh my gosh.
He also had lost his British accent and now was a wealthy, famous TV producer producing an Alfred Hitchcock series, and sure as shit, Alfred Hitchcock series had a Christopher Crow on the credits.
What?
Yeah.
So how does he come up, like, how does he figure these out? Does he just sit there at night and try and come up with some story and then
I think he reads a lot.
Figure out what he likes?
Yeah, I think he reads these,
so
like,
maybe he's like living in a fantasy world.
I think
world.
He's living in a fantasy
right.
world
he
for sure.
He's a story.
Yeah.
Well, he is a story, but.
And so he dressed this part again. He went to fancy clubs. He attended wealthy churches, like real wealthy
churches.
Yep. No one questioned this confident, somewhat good-looking man. I mean, why would they?
Right.
They see his name up on the like thing. This has to be Christopher Crow. And on top of being a TV producer, he was a financier, and he even got a job on Wall Street.
How in the world?
This guy got a job selling security bonds and even landed a fancy job at this company called Kidder Peabody and Company. Now,
holy cow.
How did he do this? He had fake social security numbers.
Say, he had to have.
He had fancy resumes that were totally fake.
But you have no references. Where are your references?
I think they didn't even check.
They must not have.
They didn't check.
I feel like you can't even get through Chick-fil-A these days without like a thorough background check.
I know. But I think his confidence.
This guy's working on Wall Street?
Yes, he's working on Wall Street.
Wow.
He didn't sell any bonds, so he did get fired from that job.
Okay. Shocking.
And nowadays, it's so easy to do a background check. I don't know. It must have been harder back then.
But I mean, it was at this point, we're like, what, 1986?
Yes, we're in the 80s.
Yeah,
for sure.
I mean, I would think it would be a little bit better by then.
He talked a big game and it worked for him.
Okay.
And
I'm
it kept working.
It's just like mind blown, right?
Yes. So Christopher Crow didn't last too long because he was still driving around this missing person's truck, right?
Yeah.
And when he tried to sell it, or actually, so allegedly he tried to give it to somebody at church. Oh, and that person.
What a nice gesture.
I know, right? Like, do you want this truck that's not actually mine?
Let me help you out.
So that guy went to go register the truck, and then the truck ended up having like a missing person. And that's a problem. So the truck flagged back to this missing couple in California. And so now the police.
It all starts to unravel.
Yes. The police are now looking for, you know, they said they're looking for a Chris Chichester, and they're like, the guy's like, no, I got it from a Chris Crow. And I'm sure the guy also, when they were like, this truck is a missing person's truck, probably called Chris Crow and was like, what's
I'm
up,
sure.
dude?
Yeah.
And so that was the last of Chris Crow.
Oh my gosh.
Chris Crow, you know, stayed pretty quiet after that for a couple years. No one really knows what happened to him for a few years.
He probably was not Chris Crow at that point.
No, I'm sure he
had another name.
I'm sure he was something else that I just don't know of. And he probably just like, I don't know, maybe he met some wealthy lady and stayed at her house for a little bit until he needed more. And that's what I'm thinking. He probably booed up with somebody. Then we come to the early 1990s. And Christian, which is his real name, reappeared as none other than Clark Rockefeller.
Oh, My goodness.
Of the Rockefellers. Now, this one takes the cake, really.
Yeah.
This one is like everybody knows the Rockefellers mm-hmm. except for Jenny and I.
Yeah, apparently. We're the last to know, but.
I mean, they are one of America's richest, most well-known families. And I mean, of course, we know the Rockefeller Center and.
Yeah. How do you fake that?
He faked it, dude. He was a Rockefeller and now Clark. Okay. So he was pretty smart. He's like, I'm not a direct descendant of John D. Rockefeller. No, that's my uncle. So I think that's how he got away with it because like people don't question the uncle thing. Right. It kind of reminds me of like a Kennedy, mm-hmm. you know, it's like,
yeah.
You're not like John F. Kennedy's daughter or son, but
it reminds me of the chick from Mom Talk who said she's a family with Ben Affleck or whatever.
And then now
they're like going back and saying, no, that's not true at all. And they don't even know them.
Oh my gosh.
Have you seen that whole thing?
No, I haven't.
And then she's saying it was a misunderstanding because she swears at some point someone in her husband's family told her that.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Like, yes. So that is like the same. So yeah. Clark says he's, you know, he is John D. Rockefeller is an uncle of his. And he walks around with some sort of like security device that he says he has to have because his family used to be in arms dealing. And that's what he would say. Like, people are looking for me and I have to have the security device with me. And
wow. He's just acting every day.
Every day. Yeah. Every day.
It's like being in a movie.
He was also said he had an estrangement from some of the Rockefellers. If people would ask, I mean, he was a real eccentric, very, very friendly, very high vocabulary. Mm-hmm. He owned all this fancy art at this point. I mean, really fancy, like paintings that were worth millions of dollars.
Wow.
He joined exclusive country clubs. Like he frequented high-end art circles. Like he would go and he'd be like, look at my art collection. It's like worth $30 million. And he would go to all the fancy restaurants. He wore really nicely tailored suits and told everyone that he was in finance. But since he was a Rockefeller, okay, this is so crazy. He was like, I'm a Rockefeller. We have all this money and I want to just give back to the poor people. And so what he did for work is this is what he told people is that he was into philanthropy and he was helping like he was dealing with real world problems, solving third world countries' debt.
Oh, my.
That's what he did.
Gosh.
And he did it for free.
Well, of course he did because.
Yes.
He can't actually do it.
And so.
Can't be a paid gig.
That is what he told everybody. And I think that's how he got the handouts. It's like, I every day go and work for these third world countries solving their debt problems. Yeah. And so they're probably like, well, do you want to join our country club? Mm-hmm. We'll just waive that $250,000 fee for you.
I mean, I like country clubs too. I don't know. Maybe I should try something like this.
You should try something like this.
I'm just kidding. I would never. But I do like country clubs.
I'm solving third world problems.
Invite me to your country club. I'll be there.
Have you ever felt like no matter how much you rest, you're still just running on empty? Fatigue, brain fog, even brittle nails, those can all be signs of iron deficiency. And here's the thing, iron deficiency is way more common than people realize. It affects about 1 in 3 adults, especially women, and traditional iron supplements usually don't cut it. They're hard to absorb, and they often leave you dealing with nausea, constipation, or a metallic-y taste. That's why I recommend Citerol from PharmaNutra. Citerol is a premium iron supplement made with patented sucrosomial technology, which basically wraps the iron in a protective shield so your body can absorb it 3 to 4 times better than standard iron. And the best part is it's gentle on the stomach. There's no nausea, no constipation, and no metallic taste. Citerol has been clinically studied, over 150 published studies, in fact, and it's trusted by more than 2 million people worldwide. It's Italy's number one supplement brand and is finally available here in the U.S. Just one capsule capsule a day with water anytime with or without food, and you're good to go. So if you're nodding along because you're exhausted, foggy, or just tired of feeling tired, this could be exactly what you've been missing. Head to pharmanutra-us.com and use the code MAMA, that's M-A-M-A, for 10% off your first order of Citrul. That's pharmanutra-us.com with the code MAMA, M-A-M-A, for 10% off today.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Who doesn't like a nice country club?
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Okay, so
it's a vibe.
It was really a noble thing, and people ate it up. He went to church with the who's who in New York and Boston, and I mean, he was like also going to church with some actual Rockefellers, saying he was a Rockefeller. This guy had the confidence.
He has like no, yeah, I was going to say, like no shame. Was
and he was really smart. Like he knew all this stuff about, you know, he knew all the stuff about history and art and. Because, like, he read so much and he retained all this information. It's like, dude, go do something
real.
That's
what I was just going to say. That's what's crazy. If you are that intelligent.
Yeah, go do something with it.
You have tons of, the possibilities are endless.
I know.
You're wasting the intelligence.
He's wasting the intelligence. Or is he wasting the intelligence? I don't know.
Wow.
But no one questioned this guy. No one looked into, not one person questioned it. And actually, there is not a Clark Rockefeller. So he's impersonating no one.
I guess that's why they didn't question it.
I guess so. Clark really had it all except for a wife. And with his charm and his pedigree, it wouldn't take long. And he eventually cross paths in 1993 with a very, very smart, accomplished businesswoman named Sandra Boss. Sandra was Harvard educated with a, I think like an MBA. And by her late 20s, she was climbing the ranks at this prestigious consulting company called McKinsey and Company. Now, this is kind of where I come in.
Okay.
Okay. I do not... Like I kind of come in, but I kind of don't. So I am friends with a guy that works alongside Sandra and has met Clark Rockefeller.
What?
Yes. That's how I know about the story. So Drew's dad.
Yeah.
Worked with Sandra and he told me, he's like, you have to do this case. My boss at McKinsey and Company was married to this guy who said he was Clark Rockefeller.
That is
and
insane.
It's insane, right? So he was like around this guy all the time. And he said, he also said like Sandra is the smartest woman that he has ever met. But
holy
this
cow.
Guy bamboozled her. Bamboozled her. So they met at a party, which is really actually kind of funny too. So they met at a clue party, like a murder mystery party. It was like so fitting. So Sandra's blown away. He's so smart. He's so like well educated. He talks the talk. He's a Rockefeller. She's just smitten with him. And he's like, you know, he's got this mystery.
He's just playing it up. Living his best life.
Laying it up. He's very eccentric too. I read somewhere that he had this like a where he lived. He was like, you know, I solve third world problems. So I don't like, yes, I have all this fancy artwork, but I don't really need like, I don't need a lot. Like I don't need even like a fancy couch like we're sitting on, Jenny. He just like lived on lawn furniture.
Though I feel like I'm falling into the couch because this microphone is so heavy. I'm literally just going further and further to the right.
I'm going to adjust
because.
So he ends up like, she's like, oh, it's so amazing that you are just solving the third world country's problems. And I make a shit ton of money at my job, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't need his money. He all, or she doesn't need his
it's
money.
Like Dirty John all over
it. It really is before Dirty John. So she's like, it's fine. I'm working. I've got it. He also has some cockamamie story about how he is, he's in a lawsuit with his family over some arms deals. So like this $50 million inheritance that he's supposed to have is like in this lawsuit. So, but also she's like, it's okay.
It's always that those are always in a lawsuit.
I know. I'm like, that should be a big red flag. Yes, if your money's tied up in
a
lawsuit.
If you have $50 million tied up in a lawsuit,
it's
just run. Just run.
I know.
Don't fall for it, guys.
I know.
Don't.
But she doesn't need the Rockefeller money. She is like, she's making, at the time when they met each other, I think she's already making like high six figures, and she's going to be a partner soon enough, and she's going to be making in the millions. So it's like, it's fine. They also were like country club members.
See, back at the country club.
He loved
the
country.
I bet it was a good one.
It was probably a good one. Now, unbeknownst to Sandra and probably Clark at the time, in 1994, while these two lovebirds were living their, you know, best Rockefeller life back in California, you know, where he was living with Dee Dee and John and Linda, well, Dee Dee had since passed, and the new owners of Dee Dee's house were moving in, and they wanted a pool. So they started digging into the ground, or construction people started digging into the ground. And guess what they found?
Bodies?
They found one body. They found a body wrapped in cellophane of human bones.
Oh my gosh.
Right there in their backyard. And now, remember.
Traumatizing.
Yes. Can you imagine? Yeah. No. I would be like, oh God. I don't know if I can live here.
Well,
anymore.
I was going to say, for sure, I would sell the house and leave.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they.
And then they'd have to disclose that.
Oh my gosh. I know, right?
By
with
the way.
With half a pool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess they could technically finish the pool and then disclose that at some point.
I think you should do that, actually.
Out. Yeah.
No. Okay.
Chances
so now.
Might be higher of selling.
They're like, there's a missing person that used to live in this house, and. Sure enough, forensic tests later confirmed that the remains were that of John Suhouse, but no Linda. And I will tell you, Linda has never been found.
Wow.
Ever. So naturally,
that's so sad.
The, you know, British accented Christopher Chichester was a wanted man.
Oh, yeah.
Or they actually wanted him just for questioning. Like, this is a murder case.
Uh-huh.
We know it.
Yeah.
And... you somehow went missing. Where the hell are you?
Holy cow.
Authorities in California began to look into Chichester. And you guessed it. This guy's not easy to catch because that wasn't really his name.
Right. He's about seven names deep by
he's
now.
Seven names deep. He doesn't even have – he's not even from England. And
yeah, you're really looking for the wrong guy.
We have no idea where that guy is. So back to Sandra and Clark living their best lives in Boston. Clark proposed in 1994, and in October of 1995, these two got married in Nantucket, Massachusetts. The wedding was really small, a very intimate setting. I think what was reported is like eight people were present.
Oh, wow.
And no one from Clark's family was there. I mean, they were supposedly coming, but...
Oh, but they were tied up.
They got tied up,
yeah.
And
then
something happened, and they got in some sort of feud, so...
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's like rich people problems.
Yeah, yeah.
Like those Rockefellers, they've got lots of feuds. I think Sandra was like, okay, it's fine. I'll go along with this ceremony. She also was so busy that she was like, just you take care of all the paperwork, you know, like the marriage certificate and all that. And Clark's like, yeah, no problem. Because at this point, like, he's kind of just a stay-at-home husband, you know, solving these problems on the computer,
say,
I guess, or something.
Debt problems.
Yeah. And Sandra didn't really have time to like
mess with it.
So as newlyweds, Sandra and Clark Rockefeller were quite the power couple. On the surface, they lived, you know, in this luxurious townhouse on Beacon Hill in Boston. And they also bought a grand estate in Cornish, New Hampshire. I mean, this sound, I don't know anything about like waspy East Coasters, but it sounds like they were, you know, yeah, that.
Right.
Now at this point, Sandra's making like reportedly like $1.4 million a year as a senior partner at McKinsey. And Clark, on the other hand, had apparently never really held a real job during their marriage. He was, like I said, the stay-at-home husband.
And that was
husband.
Never a red flag to her, ever?
Suppose.
No, she was probably just so well taken care of, she didn't care.
She probably didn't care. Yeah. It's like, it is like that dirty
he
John.
He probably was,
you know,
cooking for her and bringing pouring her wine when she got home. Yeah. And I mean, I can kind of see how that would be easy to fall into.
Supposedly, he also dabbled in the art collecting. And like I said, you remember I told you he had all these like masterpieces of art?
Yes.
Well, turns out that he even got art collectors to think they were real, and they were all fake. So, oh, I like this guy. Is.
He even tricked like legit art collectors.
Legit art collectors. I'm like, where did this guy get this stuff?
That's just, I mean, it is next level.
It is next level. They lived very comfortably for a long time.
I would think so.
They had luxury cars. The couple was just doing, you know, what amazing couples do.
And out at the country club.
Out in the country club. And in 2001, they had their first daughter, their first and only daughter, actually, a little girl named Ray, who Clark called Snooks. Now, from the outside, their life looked pretty perfect. But behind closed doors, things got really strange. Over time, Sandra noticed that her husband was not actually giving her smoothies at the bedside or pouring her wine. He was really controlling. Uh-oh. And he was very secretive. For example, he insisted that everything that they owned was in Sandra's name and not his. Even like...
Red flag.
I know. But I kind of am like okay with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I get that actually. I think 99% of our stuff is in Casey's name.
Oh, great. Maybe.
I mean,
I think probably everything I own is in my name.
I don't know. Maybe the trash is under my name. That might be about it, just to make sure I've got something.
Yeah,
I don't
know.
Right.
Okay, mine is the, our trash and water is under my name.
Yeah, I think I have just the trash under my name. Everything else is under his. But quite frankly, like, I don't need it under my name. I don't want it under my name.
I know, right?
He can deal with all that.
Yeah, so that's what probably, I guess,
so
Sandra
I
was like,
I understand. Yeah. Okay.
He probably paid the bills. Sandra just had all of everything in her name. Mm-hmm. And supposedly...
Yeah, but paid the bills with her money.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And supposedly it was to protect the privacy because of this family issues he had,
right.
You know, because it's like arms dealers and people were after them. And, you know, it was
you got to be careful.
You got to be careful. And it probably seemed okay at first, but after years and years, Sandra was like, dude, this is like weird. Mm-hmm. Also, you've never even owned your own cell phone plan. He would use it under friends' names. That's also super strange. And Clark had no paper trail of his existence at all. He was hiding in plain sight. Now, Sandra initially took these quirks as perhaps like, it's because he has old money and old money people are weird. But, you know, as the time went on and his temper actually became kind of volatile, she was like, yeah, I something is off, right?
Yeah.
So after 12 years of marriage, could you imagine 12 years?
Yes, that's a long time.
She
took her that long figure something out.
That long, yes. She decided to hire a PI and was like, who is this man that I'm married to? At this point...
Love the PI.
I know, me too. I really want to be a PI, actually.
I know. I kind of want to hire a PI for...
For what?
Somebody I know. I'm not going to say it.
Oh, okay. We'll talk later.
But it's going to happen someday.
Okay.
If you're a PI, message me.
Okay, the breaking point came around 2006-2007.
Oh no, we're not doing that.
If you're watching on YouTube, I just did this 6-7. According to later court testimony, Sandra discovered that something that set off alarm bells. Clark had told her that his mother was an English actress named Ann Carter, who had died. But Sandra, like, now we have the internet, okay? Mm-hmm. She did a simple Google search and found out that Ann Carter was actually alive and well and was not Clark's mother. He had totally fabricated this whole identity of his mom. And she was like, okay, what the fuck is going on here? And she hires this PI to do a background check, and they could find no record at all of a Clark Rockefeller.
Holy cow.
No birth certificate, no college records, nothing, nothing, nothing. And Sandra would later tell a courtroom, like, he couldn't tell me who he was, and I couldn't even tell you who I was married to. For over a decade, she believed she was a Mrs. Rockefeller.
So blindsided.
So she confronted Clark, and whatever was said or wasn't said, their marriage quickly fell apart. She filed divorce in 2007, but turns out she wasn't actually even really married to him. He never filed papers.
Oh,
so she didn't really have to file a divorce.
Oh
my gosh. She wasn't actually really married.
Made it easier for her.
Totally. So
didn't have to worry about any of those assets.
But they have this kid together. So Sandra's okay, listen, I want full custody of my daughter. Yeah. I'm going to take her to London. I am going to get away. She goes to London to start like this portion
new
of
life.
Like, yes. And I think they opened a London office, or they had a London office where she worked. So she's like, I'm going to take her. I'm going to give you $800,000 cash. You just take it and get out of my life. I don't want to even know you, see you, hear you.
Yeah.
You can have three visitations. Vanish. Yes, like seriously vanish. So she says, okay, I'll give you three visitation days with our daughter a year, but it has to be with a social
supervised,
worker.
Yes, yeah.
Supervised worker. And he takes it.
Okay.
So they move to London. The daughter and Sandra, they move to London, and Clark, you know, he's still in Boston, and he's pretty defeated because honestly, the only, I think, person that he ever truly loved in his life was his daughter.
Oh, the daughter.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
She was taken kind of away from him. Mm-hmm. And then you're also like, I'm Clark Rockefeller, but what do I do now?
Uh-huh.
I don't have my wife. I've had this life for 12 years. I had this daughter. And so on July 27, 2008, in Boston, Massachusetts, about a year after this technically divorce, Clark is getting a supervised visit with his 7-year-old daughter, Ray. He hasn't seen her in months. And remember, these are like visits with a supervised. So he's allowed these three visits, and this social worker who's monitoring the child. On this particular Sunday, Clark makes a drastic move. That morning, Clark and little Ray, who he calls Snooks, were at this court-appointed, you know, stroll through Boston's upscale Back Bay neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Clark appears to just be like a doting dad. The social worker's walking next to them. And, you know, I know when these kind of things, like, the social worker is there, and they kind of let the dad.
Right. They try not to interfere with the bonding.
Yes.
So they try to take a little step back. But now I feel like I know where this is going.
Yeah.
So he take off with her?
He does.
No.
He has a car set up, like a limo set up to just, and he tells this limo driver that he's like, hey, I'm with my daughter and this crazy friend of mine, and I got to ditch him. So like, once I get in the car with my daughter, just book it out of here. And he pays the guy like $3,000 to do this. And so the guy's like, okay. So he does just that. He like pushes Ray in the car, and he's like, just book it. Go, go, go. And the guy goes. The social worker is literally hanging on the side of the car trying to get in. And he gets,
gets
hurt on the, like, on the way out too. And
this poor
Ray
child
also hits her head in the, like, getting in the car.
Yeah.
And so now he's like, oh, we got to take Ray to the hospital. Go to the hospital. So this guy's like, okay, you know, fine. Takes them to the hospital. And once they get to the hospital, he jumps out and he takes Ray not into the hospital.
I knew it.
But he gets into
another
cab.
Car. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Now, within minutes, authorities are notified, Amber Alert is issued, and Clark Rockefeller is, you know, he's a guy that does this shit all the time.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm sure he had everything very thoroughly planned out.
He totally did.
1,000%.
So he has executed an elaborate escape and he has it all in place. So he goes to the hospital. He then gets into a cab and in the cab, he... Oh, he also tells the limo driver, by the way, that he's going into the hospital and to wait. And so the limo driver waits there for like 3 hours thinking that they're in an emergency room.
Oh, my gosh.
Instead, he's in a cab all the way going to the...
I mean, did the guy didn't like watch them walk through the doors? He didn't notice that they ran into a cab? I mean, that dude's a little...
I don't know. Maybe he walked into the door and then walked out of another door and got in a cab somewhere else.
I mean,
I guess.
Maybe.
And so the cab driver takes him to the Boston Sailing Center, a place where he kept a boat and he always was there. And now, oh, by the way, this, yes, he said he sailing was a hobby, you know, he likes those yacht clubs.
Yes, of course.
All right. So at this point, he has a woman, a friend that he was there with, waiting in a white Lexus. This friend, he had roped into this plan without knowing. He told her some story that he needed to get his daughter to New York City, gives her $500. Mm-hmm. She agrees. She's like, okay. Mm-hmm. She has no idea that she's kidnapping this child. Boston police are scrambling and the FBI agents are now getting involved because it's a child abduction. And we have a like mysterious fake identity. Yeah. We don't even know who the hell this guy is.
Right. Which makes it 10 times more difficult to hunt him down.
And by the way, he has fed all his friends all this other misinformation. Like he says he's heading into like 5,000 different directions that he's not heading in because he is not a dummy.
Yeah.
And so he says one guy, he says he's, because remember, he's like picks up, he takes a cab to the sailing center. He tells a friend that he's going to sell to Peru. Well, he doesn't even go to the sailing center. He just now goes to New York City. And so he tells another person he's going to Alaska, another person he's going to the Bahamas, Turks and Caicos. So he's planted all these like red herrings everywhere.
Seeds. Yeah.
Yeah. So investigators would later say that it was fascinating that this like guy leads them to all these dead ends, right? But he really went to New York City and they hit, they actually hit traffic near Grand Central Station.
Okay.
And he just like
gets out and bolts,
gets out with the daughter.
Oh my gosh.
And at that point, some friend of this driver calls up and is like, oh my God, have you heard the news about our friend Clark Rockefeller? He's stolen his daughter. And she is like, what? Oh my God. He was just in my car.
Oh,
she calls the police
and
is like, what the heck? Like, this guy like conned me into taking him and his daughter to New York City, probably saying he was going to like take her on like a daddy date, you know? And she calls authorities and she's like, I just
Can
help this guy go.
Making that call?
No. Like, and they're like,
and then that guilt and that you feel.
And by the way, that Clark Rockefeller is not a Rockefeller at all.
Yes, and that. Yeah.
So, no, I cannot even imagine.
Wow.
Okay, so you remember he got the $800,000 from this divorce settlement.
Yes.
And at least $300,000 of it he converted to gold coins so he could just, I guess, I don't know. I can't imagine paying for something with gold, but I guess it's like a way to transport money easily. And then the rest he had in cash. And so he knows he's on the run. Clark and Ray were long gone from NYC, and it turned out that Clark hopped onto a train and made his way to Baltimore, Maryland. Now, why Baltimore? Because, well, Charles Smith, who went by Chip, just so happened to buy a small apartment there and or maybe rent one, I'm not sure. And Mr. Rockefeller, no more. He was now a yacht captain.
Another one.
Yes, name Chip.
Oh, a yacht captain. Okay.
A yacht captain.
I like named a yacht captain.
Charles Smith. Yacht captain with his daughter, He even owned a catamaran. He already all did this. Like, he bought a catamaran.
Oh, of course.
He got an apartment.
That's what I was going to say. That's why it was probably so easy for him to evade. He probably had like three different backup plans even.
He probably did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude is smart.
He was probably betting that he would lay low as Chip Smith. I mean, Smith is a good last name to lay low with.
Yeah.
With his daughter until the heat died down and then maybe slip out of the country on the boat. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But for once, Jenny.
Finally, somebody.
Things did not go to plan.
Somebody's got to stop this man at some point.
For 5 days, the FBI and Boston police, alongside with media, blasted his face on TV asking, have you seen this man and this child? And interestingly enough, since no one really knew who he was, they started uncovering all these old identities because people were like, wait, I knew him as this person and I knew him as that person. Mm-hmm. Wait, that's
Chichester
from California. Gosh, no, that's Christopher Crowe from New York. No. And authorities were finally connecting all these dots on this these multiple personas that this guy had.
Yeah.
But the immediate concern, of course, was Ray and her safety. And mm-hmm. they feared that.
Yeah,
if,
that's a tough one.
Yes.
You got to play your cards right.
Yes, because guess what? They're worried that he's going to harm her.
Of course.
Because we've seen that time and time again.
Yes, so many times.
Yeah. So thankfully, it didn't come to that. And on August 2nd, 2008, 6 days after he kidnapped her, FBI agents in Baltimore caught a break. They discovered that Clark, or whatever you want to call him at this point, his boat was in the local marina and suspected that he was probably nearby. So mm-hmm. they called him on his phone and like on an unknown number, and they pretended to be somebody from the marina. They said, hey, oh my God, your boat is taking on water. It's actually sinking.
Oh,
you need to get here immediately.
My gosh.
And so Clark,
somebody finally outsmarted him.
Yes. And he's like, oh shoot. He rushed out of his apartment to check on the boat. And that is when the agents moved in and arrested his ass.
Finally.
He was
finally
completely caught off guard, because why would anybody think that? Like,
my
he
gosh.
Would never
Please
think
tell
that
me
anybody.
There's like video footage of this out
my
there
gosh.
Somewhere.
I
would
if there
love
is.
To see that arrest.
Me too. And so they found the little daughter, Ray, unharmed and safe.
Yay.
And thank goodness, okay. because, you know, yeah. I mean,
it could go either way.
But he loved her. So I think he wasn't going to harm her. I just think
he
really
just wanted
to have her. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he was immediately charged with custodial kidnapping, assault and battery, shoving a social worker and dragging him with a vehicle, and assault with a deadly weapon.
Oh my God.
And, but who the heck was Clark Rockefeller? At the booking, he gave a fake name. He gave Clark Rockefeller to them. But within 2 weeks, forensic evidence confirmed that the suspect, like, they took his fingerprints and remember, like, he came over here from Germany way back when.
So they had it from that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they matched his fingerprints to an immigrant on file, a German man named Christian Karl Gerstreiter.
Oh my gosh.
And on August 15th, 2008, the FBI and Boston police publicly announced that Clark Rockefeller was an alias. And he was really Christian Gerstreiter. The Rockefeller family also was like, we do not know
Wait
who this
a minute.
Is.
Yes, exactly.
This guy never
put
existed.
Put that statement out there. Get that out.
Yeah. And so really, I mean, the truth is stranger than fiction here. This is like such a crazy German con man that also Jenny had blood on his hands, because that couple from California.
Yeah.
Hello.
Of course.
He
did something.
Yes. He was the one that murdered John and Linda. I'm sure of it. I mean,
I'm positive.
Linda never surfaced, but first.
Never say never. There's still time.
I think he might have burned her in his fireplace.
Oh.
Yeah. I think he did. That's the rumor on the street, that the neighbors had smelled like this disgusting fireplace burningness during
that
time.
That is not how I want to go.
Me neither.
Like, someone, if you want to murder me, can you just shoot me?
Please don't murder her.
Yeah, I don't need any like torturous stuff. Just like shoot me and get it over with.
Well, I think he killed them and then dismembered and then
Right, and then burned. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
It's like a cremation of some sort. But
way
okay.
to go for the
no.
record.
No, but. I don't think so either. Okay. So first the trial of the kidnapping would take place. And this took place in 2009. And, you know, his attorneys were like, oh, he's legally insane. And it's like, yeah, he is insane. But mm-hmm. he knew what he,
what
was, doing.
He was doing.
He set this whole
he's
thing up.
He's insane in a different kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. Not in a way that you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. You know, he knew right from wrong. He knew what yes. he was doing.
So
he was just enjoying the fancy high life.
Yes. That's what he wanted. Thurston Howell the Third.
Yes, of course. At the country club.
So Christian also in court was still going by Clark, which is super weird. He was trying to appear as a gentleman. He did not take the witness stand, and the jury wasn't buying the insanity plea that he was giving. And so on June 12th, 2009, he was convicted of kidnapping, and he was acquitted on some minor charges, which I don't know why. But anyways, he got sentenced to 4 to 5 years in state prison, which is not that much.
I was just going to say that is not enough.
I know, but it's because it was like his daughter.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
But yeah,
it should not matter.
Not enough. Not enough at all.
And everything that he did leading up to it.
I know. Yeah. But I don't know if that's like that, besides a murder. Mm-hmm. Like, I think you can be a con man.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're.
I know con men.
Yes.
And they're getting away with it every day.
But you, I mean, but there has to be consequences for even if. I mean, there's got to be more consequences that they can give besides kidnapping.
They didn't.
Wow.
No. But it did renew the interest of this 1985 disappearance of John and Linda in California. And so investigators in Los Angeles had long suspected that Christopher Chichester, now, you know, Christopher mm-hmm. or Christian Gerhard Threister, was, I'm totally saying that wrong, by the way.
It's okay. Better than our Texas accents.
Yeah. Oh, we have good Texas accents. We really
we'll let
like,
you hear them someday.
We make our kids crazy with them. Okay. So now they didn't have a lot to charge this guy on. Like, I actually am surprised that he was found guilty, because he was. But they did open a case on him. They took it to the grand jury and they examined evidence. It was very circumstantial evidence. But...
how they always get away with it.
I know. But they, I think, you know, in March 2011, he was approaching his end of his kidnapping sentence. Okay. And so Los Angeles was like, okay, let's charge this guy with murder. He was extradited to California to stand trial. The trial took place in 2013. And the prosecution had no eyewitnesses, no DNA, no smoking gun.
Wow, but they went for it.
They went for it. The murderer was also 30 years old at this point, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was old.
Yeah.
And they didn't also have the body for 10 years. So it was totally like, the evidence was not strong. However, the remains were wrapped in plastic bags with local, with logos from universities that Christian went to, like did some weird things.
Weird
like,
thing. Yeah, yeah.
Like he, I don't know, grabbed some stuff that was like in his house that he had to wrap this body in. And I don't know why he would burn Linda and then bury
John.
John.
Yeah.
Maybe like
wondering.
The burning process just was like too.
Didn't work like, well enough.
Yes. Because a cremation is like, it has to be so hot. You can't just do it in your fireplace. So I'm thinking something of like that. But anyway, also the apartment that he was in, they did take luminol and it just like lit up like crazy. So even like years later. So,
wow.
I mean, he did it.
Yeah.
Like he did it.
Of course. Of course.
They're saying they think what happened was Dee Dee or John and Linda figured out that who this guy really was, or they were like, you're taking advantage of my mom, you're living for free, you're just like a freeloader, you're not this Chichester guy. And John and Christian was just like, I'm gonna take you guys out, your mom, and like pretend this like whole extravagant thing, and you know, there we go. So the jury, thankfully, on April 10th, 2013, found Christian Gerhardsreiter guilty of first-degree murder and killing John.
Hallelujah.
And he was given 27 years to life in prison. And Jenny, amazing. That means that he is up for parole in 2029, which is not that long.
No.
He'll be in his 70s at that point. He's serving time right now in San Quentin, which is...
Oh, that's like big time.
Big time prison. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would think he wouldn't make parole.
I don't know.
I mean, I don't think it's easy to get at that type of prison.
I wonder who he's being in prison. Like what his name is and like who pretending
I'm sure
to be.
I'm sure he's got a whole new persona.
Yeah, I would love to know. But yeah, that is the case. And it's one of the most bizarre cases in I've ever heard of. And my friend who told me about it, he's like, you have to do it. So I was like, okay, I'll do it.
That's awesome.
I'll
love
do it.
It. That was good.
Yeah. All right, you guys.
I'm like all falling into
are you
the
twisted?
Couch. I mean, this is going to be a very weird video for people.
It's
to
okay.
Watch.
I know. It's fine. It's fine. You guys just like know that
we did our best
and we even color coordinated.
I was gonna say that was an accident.
I
showed up and after we started I was like, wait a minute, we're in the same color.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And we match the curtains too, which is
weird. We do match the curtains. My curtains are actually the same exact color. You guys can't see them, but they are this color.
We need to do a behind the scenes pic.
We should do that. And then also Patreon is on Thursdays, and I think we will have a bonus case this coming Thursday. So check us out there. It's patreon.com/housewivesoftruecrime. Or if you're on Apple, you could go to the Clink Clink Club. And that's super easy. You just push subscribe. Or you can go to on Spotify. You could go to Housewives of True Crime bonus content. So there's three ways to get us on Thursdays. And it's a really good. Jenny was on last Thursday. So if you didn't check it out, we just, you know, kind of talked what about the cruise, and you got to hear a little bit more from her. So I think you guys will like it because we're going to kind of talk about just you'll get to know Jenny a little bit better if you listen to Patreon. And I think you guys are going to really enjoy us and our friendship. And I'll have to tell you really one thing very quickly, because Gretchen and I worked at Outback, and I know that you guys all know that. And Jenny's husband and I also worked at Outback, and you'll know soon, but Jenny's husband and I have known each other since we were children. Mm-hmm. And that's how I met Jenny. And so, and her husband's name is Casey, and he's been one of my best friends forever.
He says he'll never listen, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My husband doesn't listen either. Actually,
I
prefer
said,
he doesn't.
I'm going to talk about you, and he says I'm never listening.
Okay, good. Yeah. So that's why I don't really like my husband listening either. Because then he goes, then he's like, why did you say it like that? That happened. And I'm like, and sorry, I'm like mimicking or miming. What do you call that? I don't know. Mimicking him. But so it's just better if the husbands don't listen.
1,000%.
So just say like, it's fine. Just be supportive and don't listen. All right. So that's all for today. Catch you on Monday or on bonus content on Thursday.
Clink, sweet. Clink, clink.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.